the inyan of simcha, the topic of simcha, of joy, has many facets. There are many aspects of simcha that relate to a practical way that we navigate life. There are simcha perspectives that have to do with our psychology, with our way of analyzing events that take place. But tonight, I want to share a different type of simcha, a different perspective on life that maybe will help color our orientation to the way that we live. And through that, will enable us to live on a plane, so to speak, of simcha. And this idea, or a kernel of this idea that I'm going to develop, it emerges from a short passage that is taught to me and to us in a book called The Path to the Tree of Life, which is a collection of teachings on the Tanya delivered by Rav Motl Zilber. Rav Motl Zilber is a great Hasidic master living today in Borough Park. And my teacher, his student, Rabbi Zev Reichman, collected them, and the collections of teachings that he has on the Tanya are published in several volumes. And recently I happened to be studying one of these volumes, and he has a small paragraph. And I was like blown away by this paragraph. And I thought that that could really be the kernel of many different aspects of how we understand Simcha and Adar, of course, and the holiday of Purim. So let's start with the Gemara, and eventually we'll get back to Rav Motl. The Gemara tells us in Megillah Daf Yud Daled that in principle, in theory, a person should recite Hallel on Purim. Why should that be? So the Gemara presents a Kal Vachomer, a Drasha, in the name of Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. Uma me'avdus l'cheirus. What about a case of avdus, of servitude, when we were in Egypt and we went free? So therefore, we recited Shira, Amrinon Shira. We sang a song at the splitting of the sea, and we sing a Shira Hallel every year on Pesach. So mimisa l'chaim, from death to life, lo kol shekein. Of course, we should have a Shira, a song, when you go from death to life. The challenge of this Gemara is that if you read it very carefully, the parallel breaks down. Because in the first part of the parallel, we were slaves, we were in Avdus, and then we went to Cheirus, we went to freedom, right? We were slaves and we became free. But in the second side, it says we went from Misa to Chaim, from death to life. Were we actually dead? No. We were faced with annihilation, but we weren't actually in a state of misa, of death. Or maybe we were. What exactly does it mean that in the Purim story, we are going to be transformed from misa, from that perspective, that stance, to chayim? That's the first question that I want to put out there. The second is that the challenge that we face on Purim, we come face to face with Haman. This is the archetype, so to speak, Lahashmid, Laharug, Laabed, is the ultimate threat of destruction for the Jewish people. So what is the Shoresh? If someone were to ask you, what is the root of Haman? What is the root of the wickedness of this person? So interestingly, the Gemara in Chulin asks this type of question. The Gemara says, Haman min haTorah minayin. Where do you find Haman in the Torah? So what does that question mean? Obviously, you're not going to find the name Haman in the Chumash when Haman doesn't appear until after the destruction, before the rebuilding, after the destruction of the first and before the rebuilding of the second Beis HaMikdash, centuries later, millennia later. So the Gemara wants to know, what is the source of Haman? So the Gemara says, the word Haman, hey, mem nun, is the same letters as Hamin, hey, mem nun, Hamin ha'etz. Is it from the tree? Is it from the tree that Adam Rishon was instructed not to eat? Hamino eats, is it from that tree? So why do we understand? What exactly are Chazal trying to tell us that Haman has something to do with eating from the forbidden fruit, from the Eitz Hadas, Tovara? Obviously, that's what the Gemara is trying to connect, is the Shoresh of Haman is in this downfall of the serpent who came and convinced Adam convinced Chava to eat from that tree. Now, I'll just tell you a little vart, especially because I see some close friends on this. So this is a good vart to put in your back pocket in case you ever need a good vart for Purim. This is a great vart because when Adam Arishon went to eat from the Eitz Hadas, he could have eaten from 1,000 other trees. There was one tree that he wasn't allowed to eat from and he couldn't handle it. So Darshanim used to say, that's the pshat. Haman, every single person in the kingdom bowed to him. One nudnik wouldn't bow to him. It drove him crazy. So that's the connection to Adam. You like it? It's nice fart. Mostly blank screens, but okay. So that just put that in your pocket. That's not for the shir, but that's it's a beautiful vart. And it's a Musar Haskel that, okay, so one nudnik doesn't bow to you in the street. You can't eat one tree. You have plenty of other trees. You have plenty of other people. Anyway, so that's Aleph. Haman, the shorish of Haman, is somehow in the Nachash, in the eating of the forbidden fruit. On the other hand, we also associate Haman with a particular lineage. Haman is referred to as Haman Ha'agagi. He is a descendant of Agag. Agag was the melech of Amalek, the descendant of Amalek. What is the shoresh of Amalek? Of course, the shoresh of Amalek is Esav. Vatelid le'elifaz es Esav, es Amalek. Eliphaz gave birth to Amalek. Eliphaz, the descendant of Esav. So what does Haman have to do with Amalek and Esav, aside from the fact that, of course, he's a descendant? Chazal obviously wants us to understand that there is a spiritual connection. There is a theme that runs through. And what's interesting, and it relates a little bit to the cute vart that I shared with you before, is that there is a phrase, there is an outlook on life that Haman has that we find already in his Al-Dizeda Esav. What's that? Haman comes home and he's dealing with this back and forth with Mordechai, and he says to his wife, Zeresh, V'chol ze einenu shovali. It's not worth anything to me. Because every time I see Mordechai, it drives me crazy. There's something about the perspective of Haman that says, I can't find simcha. There's no simcha here. Why? V'chol ze einenu shovali. It's not worth anything. It's worthless. A perspective that lacks worth. Where does that come from? So interestingly, when you think about a commodity, valuing something, you have an expression. It appears in Chumash. Esav himself. When Yaakov Avinu approaches Esav to sell the Bechorah to Yaakov, what does Esav say? He says two things. He says, it's in Parshas told us in the end of Perek Chaf Hei, in Pasuk Lamed Beis, Vayomer Esav, Hine honochi holech lamus. I want to come back to that in 1 second. V'lama zeli b'chora. Why do I need it? It's not worth anything. So what does he sell it for? Nizid adashim. For a pot of lentil soup. Now, those in this call who remember my grandmother, Aleha Shalom, she would tell you that a good bowl of soup, especially split pea soup, is kedai. It's definitely kedai. But probably not for the Bechorah. You know what I'm saying? So what's the pshat that Esav is telling me that it's not shaveh? Haman is telling me it's not shaveh. Somehow Esav's not shaveh is related to this line, Hine anochi holech lamus. What happens after Adam and Chava eat from the Eitz Hadas Tov Ra? What does God hand out to them, so to speak, as a punishment? B'yom achol chamimenu mos tamus. You will die. It doesn't mean that they're going to physically die. V'haraya, they ate from the tree and they didn't drop dead. But there's something here about the eating from the tree and Esav and the Gemara's description of our status at the time of Purim is that is a definition of Misa. It's a situation that can be characterized as maves, as death. What does that mean? What does it mean that Esav is associated with Lamos, he's going to die, and eating from the Eitz Hadas because of the snake, and Haman is trying to lahashmid laharugal abed, he's trying to eradicate us. So perhaps, and this is alluded to in this beautiful volume, in the piece by Reb Zev from Reb Zev Reivrichman from Reb Muttal, he discusses this idea in a context, a separate context. He's talking about something else. He's talking about Chachma, but he talks about Amalek and Esav as being the opposite of life. Misa is the opposite of life. A person who has Ruchnius, who has spirituality, their neshama, that neshama has no end. Yaakov Avinu, the most complete of our avos, lomes, Chazal tells us, he did not die. Tzadikim, the righteous people, even bimisasam, when they are biologically mes, but they're kruim chaim, they're called alive. But Rishayim, Amalek, Esav, Haman, the Nachash, they are bevechinas Rishayim b'chayim kriyim mesim. Because the core distinction here is whether or not what we're looking at in the world is something spiritual or something devoid of spirituality. That is the question. What was Adam HaRishon's life like before he ate from the Eitz Hadas? I don't know. Nobody was there. We can't tell you for sure. It was a physical existence, but it was permeated with spirituality. There was no competition. There was no tension between his spiritual identity and his physical identity. It was all good. And then, unfortunately, what happened? He ate from the poison of the Nachash. And the Nachash somehow created a gap between the spirituality and the physical. And now Adam HaRishon has to contend with a world where it's not so clear, where you can see the physical separate from the spiritual. And that physical, it doesn't have any kiyum. It doesn't have any eternal worth. So Esav looks at the world, and what does he see? He sees, I've got one life to live, and there's nothing more than that. He says, Hine onochi holech lamus. I'm already dying. The minute I was born, I'm in the process of dying because there's nothing more than the physical world in front of me. It's a denial of the spiritual dimension of life. Amalek greets us in the desert. And what's special about the Jewish people? A bunch of ragtag slaves running away from Egypt. But what was special about us was that we had the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We had this spiritual elevation. And Amalek says, no, there's no spiritual dimension to the Jewish people, and they're just as vulnerable as any other nation. So we're going to attack them like anybody else. Because now, after the Eitz Hadas catastrophe, there is the potential to split between spirituality and the physical. So Rav Muttal points out that Amalek denies Tchias HaMesim. They deny the revival of the dead. Because the body is finished. There's nothing left. There's nothing after. Reish is going Amalek. Amalek takes us back to the Reishis, to the beginning, to the moment that we fell into this trap of eating from the fruit and seeing the physical world separate from the spiritual world. So the Rebbe Shlom says, this is going to be an ongoing struggle. Timche es zecher Amalek mitachas hashamayim. Lo sishkach, it's going to be going on forever. Ki yod al keis kam el chamal Hashem Amalek midor dor, because the struggle against Amalek is going to go on until we go back to the state of Adam HaRishon before he ate from that tree. Because any time we're living in an existence where it's possible to deny Hashem, it's denying Ruchnius, then you're in a state of Amalek, a state of hiddenness, of godliness, of God lack. What's going to take us back to that time before eating from the Eitz Hadas? What is the antidote to seeing our bodies as in competition with our souls? It's going to be our spirituality. What is the most spiritual of all of the senses? What happens when a person needs ruchnius, needs physically to sense something spiritual because they're feeling a lack of spirituality? You know what we do? We smell. On Motzoi Shabbos, when a person loses their neshama yaseira, we have besamim. Why do we have besamim? Why do we smell? Why don't we look at something pretty? Why don't we hear something nice? Because if you go back to the original story of when Misa, when death, when the brokenness was introduced to the world, Chava, she listened to the snake, she touched the fruit, she saw the tree, Vatera, and she ate it. What is the one sense that was not affected by the chait of the Eitz Hadas, that was not touched with the poison of Amalek and the snake? The Chush HaReach. So you think, it's very nice. My Eastern European Kovalenko nose is occupying the screen. This nose, this Jewish olfactory sense, it's coming from the world before the chait of the Eitz Hadas. That's the one feature, that's the one sense that the Sfarim HaKadoshim say was not affected by Amalek. That's why your breath, your neshima, your breathing is associated with your neshama. Kol ha-neshama ta'alalka, kol neshima. So you smell the besamim of Motzoi Shabbos, it brings you back a little bit of Shabbos, a little bit of Olam Haba, a little bit of the world before we broke it with Eitz Hadas. So now, is it interesting that the two protagonists of our story who are countering Haman, who is Hamin Ha'etz, who is looking at the world and saying, Ad Khan, it's just what you see in front of you. There is no spirituality here. It's all in front of you and there's nothing more, and therefore it's useless. You have Mordechai, which the Gemara says is Mor Dror, myrrh. It's a smell. And Vayehi Omein Es Hadassah, Hadassim. Interesting? You ever think of that? That the antidote to the Hamin Ha'etz is Mor Dror and Hadassah. Because the sense of smell is that spiritual dimension of the person. That's why when we got to Har Sinai and we were able to reject and spit out the poison of the Nachash, the Gemara says the whole Matan Torah was filled with a beautiful fragrance. Because the Chush HaReach, the smell, that's something which is intangible. It's a simen, it's an indicator of spirituality. When a person lives on the level of Mor Dror, on the level of Matan Torah, they're living without the boundaries, without the shackles of the Misa that came with the eating from the Eitz Hadas. So what do we associate Purim with? Hadar Kibluah B'mei HaChashverosh, with Kabbalah HaTorah. Purim is a day like Matan Torah, so it's a day of beautiful fragrance. Even the drinking that we refer to is Chayav Adam Lebesume, to have Bosem. So now we understand what's happening on Purim. On Purim, what do? We tell the Ribbono Shel Olam, even without our das, even without what seems to be the more spiritual part of us, the physical part, that's also valuable. That's also spiritual. That's also ruchani. It's dafka celebrating and valuing the fact that the physical is not separate from the spiritual. right? You might think that to be a Jew and to live in this world means you eschew all the physical things and you only focus on the spiritual. Amalek says, actually, if you separate the spiritual from the physical, then all you have is the physical, and the physical doesn't have any kiyum, doesn't have any value. It's holy chlamus. It's a life of misa. It's never going to be revived. On Purim, what we do is we say, even if you take away the spirituality, you take the das of a person away, the guf is also spiritual. The body is also something valuable. There's no breakdown. It's like going back to Adam HaRishon before the chait. Before the chait, Adam's guf, Adam's body, was filled with holiness. Every part of our life now is filled with holiness. Because what it turns out is that you can live an Olam Haba, a Chaye Netzach, already in Olam Hazeh. You don't have to split your life. You don't have to say, I'm eating breakfast now, that's an Olam Hazeh activity, and later I'm going to learn that's Olam Haba. No, no, no. The Olam Hazeh is Chiyus. It's not Misa. In the days of Purim, Nenu Misudaso Shaloso Rasha, the Gemara says, the people ate, they fressed at the meal. Somehow that eating, what does that eating remind us of? The eating of the Eitz Hadas, of being absorbed in something physical and not realizing that there's a spiritual character to it. So what do we do to create a tikkun for that? We have a big suda, we have a big feast, and then we give other people a suda with mishloach manos. And we're showing that within that feast, within that physical, is the spiritual. It's not broken, it's not separate. The Eitz Hadas, that was the downfall of separating the spiritual from the physical. But on Purim, we say, no, no, no. We're living Chayei Netzach. So maybe that's exactly this whole inyan of going from Maves to Chayim. Because if a person lives just in a physical Amalek Esav existence, so they're the walking dead. I'm just a body. Well, the body is everything the Maharal points out. Everything in this world is finite. But if I look at my body and I see my body as a vehicle for transcendence, then my body also is going to come back in Tchias HaMesim in some way. The body has an element of eternality because the body is a vehicle for spirituality. I'm now not bound. I'm not limited. And maybe you could argue this is the secret of the Simcha. Because if a person lives in an Amalek orientation, at some point, they're going to run out of Olam Hazeh to enjoy. Either because of the fate of this world that, you know, calamities abound, maybe they're going to get washed away on some vacation in Sri Lanka, or because they're just going to get tired of going on roller coasters, or whatever it is. If a person sees that their whole life is just bound up in living from one physical high to the next, it's going to be like Haman. They're never going to be satisfied. It's never going to be enough. And so they're going to be chasing, essentially, they're just chasing their own death. They're living, but they're dead. There's no meaning. But if a person lives in this world with an orientation of the fact that their corporeal existence is really, it's a chariot, it's a merkava for the Shechina, then the life that we live now, that's like eternal life even right now. You don't have to wait till after a person passes away to live in Olam Haba, to live an eternal life. You can live it right now. And isn't that the greatest sense of joy? To live a life of meaning rather than a life of death, a life of worthlessness, a life of meaninglessness. The fact that not only our spiritual pursuits are valuable, but even our physical things are valuable, that gives meaning to everything that we do. It's the greatest sense of simcha, that the Ribono Shel Olam, that God has given us the opportunity to infuse all of our life with meaning. That's the greatest simcha that there is. And that's why the Gemara says that we should really say, had it not been for some particular reasons, we should really say Hallel and Shira on Purim. Because on Purim, we've been able to go back to the state where it's pre-brokenness, where our physical body is also in consonance with our spiritual values. When you see somebody who lives in the level of tzidkus, there's no brokenness, there's no fragmentation. They're not exiled. They can live in Gan Eden in this world. And they live with so much simcha, with so much peace. You know, there are people who lived like that, especially in previous generations. We mentioned before my Aunt Sonia, Aleha HaShalom, and many of my grandparents and their siblings, my Uncle Dave Zichrono Levracha, I see a cousin is here, Shlomo and Deborah. These people, they lived in a level of Olam Haba in Olam Hazeh. There was no contradiction between the physical world that they lived in and the spiritual values. They lived the spiritual values. And there are people like that today. And that's what we're aspiring for. But when you do that, you have so much simcha. You have so much happiness because your life is suffused with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does the Ribbono Shel Olam describe Gan Eden as? A place that he's metayel, he's spaziering around with us. So Adam Arishon, before he ate from that tree, kiviyachol, he could have been walking around just taking a stroll with God. Each one of us, we don't have to wait till after 120. We can stroll with God right now. Because everything that we do, our lives are not bifurcated. Obviously, this is a high level for tzaddikim. And it's a struggle. But realizing that Purim is that celebration. It's the celebration of saying to Amalek. Amalek says, life is only this physical existence. We say, not true. The physical existence that we have is permeated with ruchnius, with spirituality. And that gives it a shmek, a smell of eternity. A reach of our neshama. And that reach is going to pervade our entire lives. What a simcha. What a great joy. To remind ourselves that we are the descendants of Mordechai and Esther, of the Mor Dror and the Hadas. Maybe that's why the Ketores is the Sam HaChayim. It's the ultimate antidote to Amalek and to the Satan, to the Malachamovitz, to the Yetzihara, to the number 11, because it brings it all together to Echad, to the oneness that existed before the brokenness of eating from the tree. We began by saying that this is not a talk on simcha on a practical, psychological, or emotional level, but I think it could certainly be applied in that context. Every time we take a physical opportunity and we imbue it with a value, whether that's Bein Adam Liatzmo, whether we act in a way that's in consonance with our neshama, with something that's transcendent, whether it's Bein Adam LaMakom, whether we have a conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or somebody, we have a conversation about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's a shmek, a whiff of Gan Eden. And of course, Bein Adam LaChavero, when we reach out to help somebody, we're bringing that smell of Gan Eden right here into our lives. It's the Mor Dror. It's dafka in the physical world. And to realize that that is all, it's unified, it's echad, that gives us so much simcha in our lives. Halavai, we should be zocha this year to see that simcha, to see that simcha befoal. But I'll just close with this, and this is really remarkable. Having myself had the opportunity to see, to witness, to be in Israel in this tekufa, and to listen to people who have undergone the most difficult nisyonos and are continuing to undergo such nisyonos, and yet simply that there's no other way to say that they exude simcha somehow. How do they do that? The answer is because they are living in a life of chias like this. They realize that their son who fell fighting, he's not gone because his neshama is going to live on forever. And they're living through that neshama. They're connecting to that neshama. They're donating a Sefer Torah in his memory. The idea that there is physical death that's happening today, Rachmana Litzlan, is being countered by a life of chiyus, even as it relates to those kedoshim. It's unbelievable that tzaddikim, the tzidkanios in Israel today who are living this Purim story, that even though they're going from a state of maves, They're living with Chaim. I'm sure it's very difficult. I can't even imagine the level of tsar, of yagon v'anacha. But we should be mischazik. We should see these heroes and realize they are actually applying this lesson. They're seeing the nefila, the fallen soldiers in their families. They're seeing that through the perspective of life, that their children will come back b'tchias hameisim, and that their lives are continuing, that their neshamas are living on, and that we in our lives, in our world, we are living chayi netzach. That is the antidote to Amalek that sees a world of death, of limitation. We live in chayi netzach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should provide chizuk, nechama, bracha, hatzlacha, Besuras Tovas for all of Am Yisrael, and this Adar should be Mole Simcha. We should see Besuros Tovos, Yeshuos, Venechamos.